Welcome to the podcast. As a listener, you're invited to claim your comp pass for our next live full-day Software Oasis virtual AI event with the world's top B2B AI experts. By attending, you'll join our engaged community of founders and executives from over 200,000 leading B2B global organizations. AI won't take your place, but a competitor leveraging it to drive results will. Learn the latest in AI first Thursday of every month. Tap green button at softwareoasis.com or use show notes link to secure your pass. Today's episode is about why so many online stores keep pouring money into ads without ever really fixing how their sites convert and measure traffic. Our guest, Matthew Stafford, is the founder and CEO of Build, Grow, Scale, an e-commerce growth firm that helps online stores systematically increase revenue and profit through data-driven optimization. Matthew has helped hundreds of e-commerce brands scale from 7 to 8 figures, tracked over $800 million in revenue, and worked with names like Discovery Channel, ESPN, and Mark Cuban companies. He explains why traffic usually isn't the real problem, how to authenticate and segment visitors to cut out waste, and how to use data and AI to turn your existing clicks into your biggest profit center. This is B2B Automation Spotlight, and I'm your host, Michael Bernzweig.
Matthew, I really appreciate your taking some time out before your presentation later in the event to join us and give us a little bit of a peek into the journey, getting to where you are and sharing with the audience. So I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about your founding journey, you know, what you were doing before Build, Grow, Scale and everything that is going on over at BGS today.
Yeah. So I was self-employed right out of college. I went to school for architectural drafting and then ended up creating a commercial concrete business. So I did that for about 23 years, ended up traveling all over the country. We did the big box stores like Walmart, Home Depot, Lowe's, Menards. And then we got into 3D paving, which is concrete paving with slopes and all the rest and the equipment that's involved with that. So essentially, I built myself into a life that I didn't enjoy any longer because I was on the road about 200 days a year, living in hotel rooms. And I went to a Tony Robbins event in, man, I want to say it was like Sioux Falls, South Dakota or somewhere. And when I went to that event, he was selling a program called Money Masters. And what it was a monthly program where he would send you a DVD and a booklet about somebody making money online. And they would go through their experience and what they were doing. The first one was Frank Kern. He was talking about making $50,000 to $60,000 a month online selling ebooks on how to teach parrots how to talk. And I just thought, like, that's incredible. Like, I could do that from anywhere. I wouldn't have to live on the road 200 days a year. I wouldn't have to have 25 employees and $2 million worth of equipment that's sitting idle on rain days or when it's snowing in the winter. And so all the possibilities opened up to me and I started thinking like, wow, if I could do that, I could get out of this business and do something that I really enjoyed and I could scale it. And so I tried my hand at probably the first thing that everybody does. And this is, you know, back 15 years ago, was SEO. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I can figure out how to create links and do this for local marketing. And the reason why I thought that mattered so much was because I had 2 salons too. So I thought, okay, I'll figure out this marketing thing and it'll work on my salons. Well, it did. And I enjoyed doing it for myself. I didn't enjoy doing it for anyone else. So I thought like, no, I'm not going to open an SEO agency and do something that I don't like because I already have a good business in concrete. My salons are doing much better now that I understood marketing. I'm going to figure out a different way. Well, about that time, a platform came out called Teespring, which was essentially you could put a design on a t-shirt and then you could run Facebook traffic to it and sell it in a campaign. So you could set a campaign for 3 days or 7 days or 2 weeks, sell as many as you could. And the more you sold, the cheaper they would print and fulfill it. And then you would make the profit, and the difference between whatever they charged you and your ad spend would be your profit. Well, I started doing that, and I had a knack for coming up with funny phrases and sayings, and it did really, really well. So the first 30 days, I think I had two very successful campaigns that made over about 100 grand. Well, to me, even though I had a commercial concrete business doing 4 or 5 million a year, my take home from that might have been, you know, 300-400 grand a year. And so to make $100,000 in a month, to me, was just absolutely crazy, because I was doing it on the road while I was traveling. I could do it at night. I could come up with a couple of designs, let the ads run during the day while I'm pouring concrete. And I thought, man, if I could do this full time, I could really, really make a difference. And so I worked myself into essentially selling the concrete business and the two salons. And then over the next 3.5-4 years in t-shirts, I sold about $15 million worth of t-shirts. And I realized, like, yeah, I definitely want to be online and I really enjoy it. And so I did it all from, you know, working from home, didn't have to go to office anymore, didn't have to travel. It was really nice. And then in that, I learned, you know, I developed several friends online, and I started telling them, I'm like, guys, I think I've, well, actually, I jumped ahead a little bit. They wouldn't give us our data. And so we realized, okay, for this to be a real business instead of just like Amazon where they can take it away from you, we need to own our data. So let's go ahead and start a Shopify site. We'll get on Shopify, then we own our own data. So that was my first foray. I got onto Shopify, started selling kitchen products, doing really well. And then over time, I started following all these marketers, like add this app and do this upsell and do this. Started doing all these things. And what I realized was ads got harder and harder to be profitable. The site was not converting like I wanted it to. And there was a guy that was offering Google Analytics training for 6 phone calls. He charged $1,000. And so I took that. And then each week I would take the data from my store, go back, make some changes. And we went from profitable to not profitable to profitable again. And I thought, oh, okay, this data actually shows us all kinds of things that we can do on the site that will make it work much better. And now my ads aren't so volatile. And so I reached out to some of my friends that were online with me selling t-shirts. And I said, guys, I think I've figured out some things that like we're not aware of. And one of them, they were doing about 300 grand a month online in sales. And so we started using their data and changing things. And granted, this is 10, 11 years ago. We went from 300,000 a month to 2.7 million in 6 months. And so I'm like, okay, that worked. Because I was a little nervous that, you know, maybe it's just going to work for me and it's not repeatable. So I tried one more friend, and he was selling a supplement. And the year before, he had done 2.75 million on his store. Within 90 days, we had him at an $8.3 million run rate. And by the end of the year, he had done 16 million. I'm like, okay, this actually really works. We can do this for other people. And that's really how BGS was birthed. I had a partner. He was really good at funnels, but nobody could get their e-commerce store to convert like a funnel. And so by doing the things that we were doing, made the e-commerce convert much higher. And then we kind of, him and I partnered, I partnered what I was doing. He started teaching it. And that's why it became the BGS, which is where we now work for people, helping them optimize their stores.
I love it. And, you know, at the end of the day, as you've shown right there, and I think a lot of people will identify with, entrepreneurship and business, it's not a straight path to success, and a lot of curves in the road. And it is a journey that is not for the faint of heart, but for those that put in the time and effort and dig into those details is really just a ton of learning, and it's refining, it's optimizing, it's iterating along the way, no matter what you're doing. Get to all of those questions, or as many as we can. And Matthew, I really appreciate you taking the time out to walk us through your journey. Hi. Matthew Stafford is the founder and CEO of Build, Grow, Scale, an e-commerce growth firm that helps online stores systematically increase revenue, and profit through data-driven optimization. His client roster includes many notable brands, including Discovery Channel, ESPN, and Mark Cuban companies.
So typically, people don't find data a real exciting thing to talk about. And I'm hoping that at the end of this podcast that you maybe can consider look at your data a little different way, because for me, it's very exciting. Over the last 10 years working with all of these different brands, what I've found is that by using data and not the latest trick or hack, that we can create predictable and repeatable success over and over. Because the one thing that really doesn't change is that on the other side of your website is a person. And so the data just tells us how that person's interacting with your site. And that can vary, you know, depending on your demographic. But I'm going to share with you a few different ways today where you can leverage this data and then use it to go from maybe a profitable brand to becoming the dominant player in your market just because you're using the data in a way that the other people aren't. Just so that you have a little bit of background, why would you want to hear from me? I've helped hundreds of e-commerce brands scale past the $1 million to $10 million mark. We've tracked over $800 million worth of revenue. We used to run the largest e-commerce CRO event in North America for several years. And we've also had a mastermind of over 1,000 different coaching students that we helped grow their stores. And this is where a lot of our case studies came from. So my claim to fame since I started doing this, I got into e-commerce as a store owner and was very good at running traffic to my store. But I realized that it just felt like it was very hit or miss, and it was a grind in order to figure it out. And what I realized is when I started looking at the data and analytics, the traffic's not really the problem. And what do I mean by that? Well, about 80% of your traffic that hits your site leaves anonymously.
Matthew, how should e-commerce teams rethink the split between traffic problems and site problems?
You never know who they are or capture any data on them. The other thing is the average conversion rate on an e-commerce site right now is about 2%. So that means for every 100 visitors that you get, you lose about 98 of them that never take an action. And for me, that felt very broken because coming from the traffic world, everybody always said, I need more traffic, or the ads aren't working. And so all of the responsibility was put on the ads to create the sales. And that's where the system is actually broken. If someone clicks on an ad and comes to your website, then the ad did its job. Now, if they don't convert, that's your website's problem. The website is, you know, essentially who takes the person from a browser to a customer. And we'll go through a few things. Obviously, with 15 minutes, I won't get into a lot of granular stuff just because I don't want to confuse you, but I'd be happy to discuss it when we go through the question and answers. All right, so I'm going to show you why today the traffic that you already pay for is the biggest untapped profit center. It's not driving more traffic. It's taking the traffic that's coming to your site and maximizing it. Now, first myth, people will say, well, I can already see this data in Google or Meta. To me, there's a huge difference between data and insights. So Google and Meta keep the insights to themselves so that you continue to need them in the future. Let's use a car analogy to drive this home. If I have a VIN number, I could know a whole bunch about the car. I could look it up and it would tell me what year it is, probably what color it is, and, you know, the style. But that would be data. Having the car sitting in my driveway would be the insight. It would be very easy for me to look at it and understand a whole lot more about it than it would be for me to look at the data. So that's kind of what I want you to imagine and how I want you to see your data when I show you this next slide. So here's an example of the data that we collect from the people that have landed on the site. You can see that we have their email, we have their name. In many cases, we have their phone number, we have their LinkedIn profile. We know what date they consented. We also, if you look at the little pop-up right there, you can see an email address, consent date. I just have the ones that are showing, but there's about 150 different pieces of data that we can get on all of these people that have visited our website that actually haven't taken an action, but we've resolved about 30% of them so that we can actually market to them. So much of this data is available to us. And the funny part is most entrepreneurs don't even know that they can get this data. And then even worse, if they know they can get the data, they don't know what to do with it. So hopefully we'll walk you through a few of those examples today and then help you understand. One, understanding where your traffic's coming from. So it's not just Google, Meta, TikTok, et cetera.
How do you break big channels like Facebook or SEO into meaningful segments that you can actually optimize?
There's multiple other people that send traffic to your site, and understanding that and knowing where to leverage it is super important. And on the next slide, I'll give you an idea of what I mean by that. So myth number two, people think paid media, organic traffic, SEO traffic, that those are all segments or channels. And that's, if I'm running Facebook traffic, then I'm maximizing what I can do. I just need to have better ads. Or if I'm doing SEO and getting organic traffic, I'm doing the best I can. Well, I'll go back to the car analogy for a minute so that you, hopefully this really helps you see how you can look at your data different so that you can maximize it. I could have a BMW X and that would tell you what kind of car I have. That would be similar to paid media. Or I have a BMW coupe that could be organic. The difference is those vehicles can be spec'd out all different ways. So you can have like a M4, an M6, you can have a competition. So all three of those things that I just labeled would be inside of paid media or inside of organic. And they would be vastly different segments within one channel. So looking at these large channels as a single source is one area where most people lose the actual value that you can get from each one of these channels and the data from them. We want to, depending on what we're selling or what we're offering to our clients, we want to be able to maximize the segments with inside the channel. Hopefully that makes more sense to you. Instead of just breaking it down into channels, but understanding inside of there are segments that are a lot more valuable than others, and then how to identify them, and then how to monetize that. So last year, it's no secret, agency spent over $400 billion on paid media. Let that sink in for a second. The scary part of that is a huge chunk of that wasn't even spent on real humans. So the truth is, without authenticating these people, we're literally sacrificing about 30% of our ad spend on junk traffic or traffic that will never ROI. So how do we resolve that? For me, if I'm doing that and I'm not going through and figuring out how to authenticate these or how to look at my data and pull those different segments out, I feel like, you know, one of my mentors told me without looking at the data, he goes, you're kind of relying on hopium. And so for me, I wanted to stop hoping that I was going to be profitable and use the data to reverse engineer what was happening. Like I said earlier, create predictable and repeatable success based off of human behavior, not just what my gut feeling is or me thinking that I'm my best customer. So let me ask you this. If half the people clicking your ads aren't who you think they are, what does that mean for your ROI? Obviously, you can go from being marginally profitable to maximizing your profit if you can start cutting out these segments that with the data proving which ones aren't working and then to double down on the ones that are. The problem is, and we'll use another analogy of a bucket, is that every click that you spend in these paid media or every visitor that comes to your website costs you money in one form or another. If it's SEO, it's in time. If it's in paid traffic, it's in actual dollars and cents. But what most agencies are not doing is they're not eliminating the bots, the ghosts, and the fake visitors. So it's like filling your bucket with holes, and no matter how much you pour in, it still continues to leak. And many times, the faster you pour it in, the faster it leaks. And so a lot of times people are like, oh, I just need to spend more. I just need more learning. I need my ads to learn better. The truth of the matter is, again, I want you to understand this because most people place the blame on the wrong spot. They get all the visitors to their site, but because they don't convert, they blame that on the traffic or they blame that on the ads. When the visitor has hit your site, the ad did its job. Now what matters is that your site does the job and it actually uses buyer behavior signals to optimize that. If you think about it, if the average e-commerce site converts at 2% and 98 people leave without buying, to me, everybody saying buy more traffic, get more traffic, fix the ads seemed counterintuitive. For me, I thought I already have 100 people that have raised their hand, clicked on the ad, came to my site. If I can clean up my site a little bit and get two more of those 98 people that just left, I've doubled my business on the same ad spend. Instead of buying more traffic and hoping or being marginally profitable, now I can maximize my profit. And it goes back, I always think back to the old saying that Dan Kennedy used to say is he who can spend the most on traffic to acquire a customer will win, because now they can go buy more and more traffic at a profit where the other people are struggling. And so for me, being able to convert 4 or 5 or 6 more people out of those 98 people that raised their hand is what has created the predictable, repeatable success for our clients and in our own sites that we work on. So hopefully that makes a little more sense. All right. So I've worked with huge brands, Men's Health, Discovery Channel, Mark Cuban Companies, similar to what Michael said when he first introduced me. And I've been here myself too. I've scaled a lot of their stuff. And just because they're a bigger company doesn't mean that they do this better. A lot of times it means that they just, because they own the traffic, they have a lot more of it, but they're not doing a good job of converting it when it hits the site. And so again, all of these points that I'm bringing up is for me to help you understand that your data matters, and understanding your data is going to give you the advantage that the other companies don't have. And the reason why I say that is because to most people, data is very scary. They think like they know they need to do it, but there's a learning curve to it. And without being able to simplify it, they tend to put it off. I would say that most entrepreneurs default to certainty over opportunity. So they know if they do certain things, they're going to survive, but they don't necessarily know that they'll thrive. They keep hoping they will, but they'll default to that certainty rather than the opportunity that's actually in front of them by understanding their data. So let's just kind of summarize a little bit, and then we'll hit the last few points. Without being able to identify the data that and the visitors that land on your site, you end up with wasted spend, fake leads, and frustrated clients. All of this works out to you sending emails that have 20% or 30% open rates because a bunch of those things that filled out your email forms were bots. And they're never going to open. They're never going to convert. But when you send it to that, you're sending signals to the ISPs that this is your data and this is who you're talking to. And because there's no response, they go, oh, this is all promotional. We'll just move him over to the promotional tab, or we'll move him over to the spam. And then you see over time that gets worse and worse. by having clean data and having it authenticated, you can use those audiences to send much better signals to the ad platforms, to your email, to your organic, et cetera, because all of those will give much higher signals. So with the identification, now your campaigns are much better. You have accurate reporting. Just to give you an example, the other day, we were going through the data on one of our clients, and they said, this period last year, we were converting at 3.5%. What's going on? This year, we're only converting at 3%. And so we knew that their store was converting higher. And so we got on a call and we went through the data. What we realized was there was a blog post that they were running traffic to that had sent 8,000 visitors to the site without a single sale.
Matthew, how does better data cleanup change the story you tell yourself about what's actually working?
So when we removed that, the conversion rate was now higher than it was a year ago. And then we also looked at the conversion rate from Facebook was converting at 0.8 the year before, and this year it was converting at 0.2. So when we removed those two false negatives from the equation, their store was actually converting much better. They turned the ads off to the blog post that obviously wasn't turning into any buyers, and all the numbers went back to normal. All of that wouldn't happen, and you can't analyze it if you're not tracking the data. And like I said here, it's actually the difference between keeping a client and losing them. You know, I run an agency, so I understand exactly what the cost is in churning clients. And, you know, there's probably a few of you that are agencies. You understand that same thing. Or if you're a business owner, understanding the difference between what's working and what's not working, many times we'll shut off something that's doing its job because we have other indicators that are false positives. So how do we fix it? One, it's not about spending more. It's not about your campaigns needing longer learning time. It's actually about fixing the leaks that you already have. And then once you do that, once you tighten it up, now you can, when you pour the water in the bucket starts to fill up and gives you more profit that you can then use to grow your brand. And so it's really about identifying the people that come to your site, authenticating them, and then using that information to actually monetize accurately and a lot more profitably because you're no longer using a lot of false signals in order to create the monetization. Identifying every visitor, know if they're real or if they're human, authenticate their engagement. Essentially, you know, think about this as we're locking the front door. Now we know that those people gave us a good signal. We can use those in our audiences that we build off of so that the ad platforms give us a better audience. Google sends us the right organic traffic. They give us more organic traffic because when you give them the signals that they're looking for, they identify you as a high value and as giving the person a good site experience. So when you start checking these boxes, they actually have a lot more traffic to give you and they'll turn that on for you. And then monetizing it. And I'll actually share a CRO principle here in a minute that anybody with a website can use so that you can take exactly what you've learned today, go back to your own site and make some more money with it. So one case study is we had an agency that worked with us. We turned on this data authentication and their ROI went up double digits. They didn't change a single ad, no keywords, nothing. It was literally just cutting all the fake traffic out of the equation and giving the ad platform good signals. So how would that happen? One is precision retargeting. We're training the platform with that audience, that particular audience, which is clean data. We know it's human. It acts different than a bot. So you'll have stronger lookalikes and then your ROAS will go up. Facebook and Google and your ad dashboards with, you know, I always say garbage in, garbage out. So when you give good signals and good data, they reward you for that. They actually care more about the user experience than they do about your ad dollars. And so the better signal that you give them, the better traffic that they'll send you. And many times you'll see your CPMs go down. Second Yeah. Use case number two, attribution accuracy. Now, as an agency owner, this is super important to me because it feels like the one thing that most owners worry about is, okay, everybody's always claiming the attribution. Everybody's always saying it's their thing that's doing better, but they can't prove it without good, clean data. And so by showing them exactly where it's coming from, what source sent it, how it's converting, it takes a lot of the guesswork out. Instead of them going, Facebook is doing this, Google is doing this, we can say, no, this segment within Facebook is the highest performing. And so by being able to break it down in segments rather than big channels, the data isn't obscure, it's very detailed. And third, the monetization beyond the ads. Once you have this new traffic and you create a sale, you now can sell to them again and again and again. And like we said early on in the presentation, about 80% of your site visitors leave anonymously. Capturing them, looking in the data, monetizing this data gives you all different opportunities that you can now optimize every part of what's happening on your website. Instead of thinking more ads, more spend, you can actually gather more ROI from every dollar that you've spent. So, all right, quick show of hands. How many of you have had clients or yourself have complained about the traffic that you're having that wasn't even real, or you couldn't actually track it and understand where it was coming from or why it wasn't converting? I'm sure everybody raised their hand. So now imagine 12 months from today, when every click's identified, every visitor is authenticated, and your ROI per visitor is going up. So your site, once they land on your site, now your site is actually doing its job and maximizing the ROI that you get from each dollar. So all of that happens, I think, before you turn on your ad spend or before you increase your ad spend. Our goal is always to have you spend the least amount possible until your data is accurate, and then maximize. And then when you scale, it gives you so much more opportunity to use those ad dollars in a way that benefits your company instead of just giving it to the big platforms. And again, that's one last thing. This is the line in the sand. So there's agencies that will ignore this, or there's site owners that will ignore this, or think that, yes, I need to understand my data. Yes, I need to dig into it and figure that out. But I don't have time to do it right now. Versus the agencies that do it, or the site owners that do it. So my question for you is, which side of that line are you going to stand on? I will also say, over the last, and I had this conversation with Michael yesterday, the last 24 months has been absolutely incredible what AI is enabling us to do from a data standpoint, where our brains work very linearly in order to analyze the data. With AI, instead of me walking into a library and going, I want to read about buyer psychology, and I go over to a book and I pull it out and I start reading on it, with AI, I can say, I want you to read every single book in the library that has to do with buyer psychology, and I want you to optimize the data that I have or that I'm giving you in order to use that buyer psychology to create more sales. Or I say, my average order value is $100 and we convert at 3%. I want my average order value to be $130 and I want to convert at 4% in the next 90 to 120 days. Using this data, how could I do that? Or could you help me build a roadmap that would get me there over the next 90 to 120 days? So I want you to think outside of the old way of looking at your data, the old way of maximizing your data, and start using AI in a way that can help you do things that it's just not possible on a human level. All right, I'm going to give you, like I said, I'm going to give you a CRO trick that works on any website. And it goes, I tested this for years. This is the best language that we've ever gotten. And I got it from the book that by Robert Cialdini called Persuasion. He was talking about when a bunch of people are in line and someone comes up and asks if they can cut, about 8 out of 10 will be turned away. But if they come up and ask that same group of people if they can cut and they give a reason, any reason, 8 people will be led in line and only 2 people will be turned away. And the reason doesn't even have to be good. So I thought, like, we were looking at the data on the checkout, and obviously this is where the transaction happened. So any boost that we have here creates a lot more revenue for the store owner or the agency that's optimizing this. So what we did is we told them why we wanted this information. Most forms just say email or phone number. But we told them it's required for your order confirmation. Well, your order confirmation email is opened 85% or more. So we know that that's the number one most opened email. So people give us their good email. They give us their best one. That helps us market to them if they do abandon. Then under phone, required for shipping notification. Who doesn't want to know when their product's going to be shipped? And so by doing this, this little trick, we've had as much as a 17% lift on the checkout just from giving them a reason why we're asking for information. So think about other places on your site that you can use this same principle, but certainly on your checkout, which is right where the transaction takes place. All right, so let's bring it all home. We started with the problem of wasted spend on fake visitors. We walked through, you know, verifying them, authenticating them, and then turning that into a monetized pathway. And we saw that by doing this, the future is exactly what we were looking for. The reason why we got into business in the first place was that our return on our investment was much greater. And it wasn't by spending more, it was by capturing more so that then when we spent, it was profitable.
Now, and we'll get to those in this next session. Now we will hear the Q&A panel that Matthew was on at the live event.
Okay. I hope everyone had a great early morning and enjoyed that last Q&A session. Here we are heading into the second Q&A question session, and we've taken all of the feedback and all of the comments from everyone to the event so far. And I want to start off by introducing everyone that's on this Q&A panel. It's the speakers that you've heard over this past hour. So we have Phil Bacon, who is the founder of Marketing Managed, Paul Furiga, he's the chief storyteller over at Vendilly, Ryan Birch, who is the founder of Toby Group, and Matthew Stafford, who is the founder and CEO of Build, Grow, Scale. So I just wanted to introduce everybody on the panel. One detail I had come in is questions over the event so far, and I just wanted to point out to everybody. You can see the event under the schedule here, so you can see the upcoming sessions. And then you can also see past talks. So if you were listening to a presentation and got distracted, or you were taking notes and want to go back, you can just click on that little toggle there and you can see previous sessions. During the event, you don't have to worry that you're going to miss anything. You'll see the next presentation come up in the watch now down here in the bottom left of your screen. And throughout the event, if you want to connect with any of the speakers that you hear, just click on that big orange button up at the top of the screen. So with that, I see the first questions coming in, and I see actually one for Phil. This question came in from Nashville, Tennessee. So right here in the U.S. and from Madison. So let me just pull that question up on the screen here. So Phil, this question that Madison was asking is, when you audit a company's marketing, what tells you they have a fireworks problem instead of a foundations problem, as you were talking about in your presentation?
Key thing's going to be around the sort of like looking at the metrics and what they're actually getting out of it. So if they're doing all the core work and they've got this, they've got a nice steady base, things just kind of rumbling along in the background, and they are actually putting the time and effort into that foundational side of things, and they've got consistency there, we can then start looking at all the fireworks, the fun, the sexy, the bright, shiny object, and look at those and look at them and see why they're not, see if they're working or not. Typically what happens is people go after, will chase after the bright and shiny, and go, we want to do this, and they'll do it for like 3 weeks or a month or 3 months. They don't give it enough time for it to actually grow and deliver. And they'll, but the real problem comes from that happening multiple times, and they'll be chasing after the next shiny, the next shiny, the next shiny. And sometimes at the same time, they'll be chasing after multiple shinies, so nothing ever gets done properly. So even the shinies, even the fireworks and the things you want to do, these still have foundational blocks within them that you actually have to do before you can get results. And that's what we'll see when we're doing audits.
Makes a lot of sense. And the next question that came in is an interesting one. And this is actually for Matthew. This question comes to us from, let's see, Avery, who's in Vancouver over in British Columbia, Canada. And let me see exactly what, okay. So the question is, in your presentation, you mentioned that 80% of the traffic leaves anonymously. What's the first data capability an e-commerce brand should build out to capture more value from the traffic?
I believe it's a consent banner. So when you add the consent banner and they give you permission, now they go from anonymous to resolved, and you can market to them legally.
Makes a lot of sense. And how would an org, are there different platforms that enable that automatically, or what's
the best data? There is. I can tell you the one that we use is IntentWave. I've been able to use all different services just because of who we are and the clients that we have. A lot of people come to us with their software and ask us to promote it. And that's the one that we've used with really good success.
Perfect. So it sounds like that's a good foundational step to get things rolling in the right direction. And the next question that came in, let's see here, was for Ryan. And this question is one that came in a few times. And this one is, given how fast platforms change, what core principles of paid media strategy do you consider timeless for advertisers that they can focus on over the long term? And this question actually came in, I just want to give them credit. This came in from Youssef, who's over Casablanca, actually, in Morocco.
Okay. It's hard to focus on just, you know, just a couple things that are quote unquote timeless. I was smiling at Phil's answer because, you know, some of the foundation versus fireworks thing is what we experience a lot of the time in our business when we're running advertising campaigns. We've got clients that want to run these really flashy, sexy ad campaigns, but they don't do some of those foundational things before they turn, you know, campaigns on. So a couple things to think about at a very fundamental level, really understanding who you're trying to get in front of and who that core audience is, and remembering that your current customer might not be your ideal customer, and doing the hard work of really trying to understand the right audience first, so that no matter how fast the business is moving or how fast technology is moving, you always have to understand that. And in fact, I'd say that it's even more important to do that when things are moving quickly. Second thing is just making sure that all of your technology is buttoned up. So it might sound a little flashy, but honestly, you've just got to have all of your conversion tracking in place. You've got to spend extra time just making sure that those fundamental pieces of the ad platforms are working. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to give the ad platforms, the algorithms and everything, the correct inputs. So hopefully that answers the question for you, Seth.
Yeah, I think so. This next question comes to us from a whole other part of the world. This is from Mina, who is over in Jordan, over in Amman, and this is for Paul. The question is, how do you define the capital S story in a way that resonates with highly technical B2B founders?
Well, that's a great question. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, just checking. I had a little blip here. So thanks, Mina, for the question. Technology is still all about people. What we're trying to do with our technology platforms is create results. It's not B2B or B2C, it's B2P, business to people. And the kinds of stories that resonate in this space can be categorized into a few. I'll give you five right now. One is the founder story. Why did the founder decide to to create a better mousetrap? And number two, it's the greatest innovation since sliced bread. How did this happen? And number three, accidental. Well, think about them in Post-it notes. They were trying to make the strongest glue in the world, and instead they came up with Post-it notes so that you can have your accidental discoveries. Quite frequently in the technology space, I always use Canva as an example. Canva was around for a long time before the COVID crisis really gave that company its valuation and its place in the marketplace. So the fourth one is, you know, this is something that's time has finally come. And then the fifth one, I think that's most common in the technology space that we'll see is kind of, I didn't know I needed this thing, but here it is. So those are five common capital S stories that I think really resonate with C-suite leaders in the technology space.
Interesting. And I think that makes a lot of sense. Those are some core areas to focus on. Phil, the next question that came in was actually for you. And this came in from Ruby in Brisbane, Queensland, over in Australia. And her question is, what simple questions can a founder ask to clarify their positioning before spending more on overall tactics?
The simple questions are the W's, really. It's the, what do we do? Who do we do it for? What makes us special? Why we're better or why we're different from the competition? And as soon as you start drilling down into it, it is those W's and there's the H as well, the how. But as soon as you start drilling down into those questions, you really start to have to dig into, well, one, dig in, but also strip away all the rubbish. The rubbish that you believe is right. And sometimes actually go and ask your customers. If you go and actually ask your customers or your prospective customers what they actually need and how they want to see it, you're going to get some very, very interesting answers. And that's going to help you with your position. That is going to help with your position. That's going to help you with your positioning. It's going to help you with your product. It's going to help you with your service. You're going to be speaking the right language to the right people then.
Makes sense. And Ryan, this next question that came in, I'm picking this one because I think a lot of the organizations that are at the event today will resonate with this. And I think it's a great question. This, we're back to the United States. This is Jacob out in just outside of Phoenix, Arizona. And what Jacob is wondering, Ryan, is how can a founder with limited data skills confidently set realistic CPA or return on ad spend goals before launching campaigns?
Good question. If you've got poor data skills, hopefully you are making up for it by having really good, just straight business skills. You should know how much you're selling things for and what type of money you need to make off of those to be profitable. So that's usually the place where you need to start, is just how is your business making money? And you could start to back into some of the, I assume that the question is kind of around ad metrics and how to analyze whether campaigns are performing well.
Yeah, sounds.
Look, you've got to, so one of the things that business owners and marketers mess up when they try to do some of their costing is they forget that they have multiple marketing channels that are active and live. So that might look something like, hey, I need to make $10 for every unit that I sell or $100 for every service I sell. And then what they'll do is they'll apply that cost across all of the different marketing channels. So they'll apply $100 to Google, they'll apply $100 to paid social, they'll apply $100 to their SEO practices, $100 to their website, and they forget that all of those things actually have to add up to that $100 cost. So I'd say first, think about your profitability for whatever you're selling. And then second, don't forget that your marketing is kind of more like a relay race, and try to allocate accordingly across those channels and not just lump everything together.
Makes sense. And Paul, this next question came in from a member of actually of the community who's over in Belfast in Northern Ireland, Jack. And I like this question because I think it, again, is something that a lot of companies are wondering. So if a company has multiple product lines, should it have one overarching capital S, as you mentioned in your presentation, story, or several different ones?
Well, that's a great question, Michael. And the answer is both. It all fits together. So let's take some examples. In the technology space, a lot of times the way your audience that uses your product engages with you is by the name of the product. So that needs to have a story. And we've always got choices in the marketplace. Even when a technology doesn't exist to solve a problem, the solution is do nothing, right? So what's the story that compels your audience to engage with your product? A lot of times what happens in technology is maybe we start with one product and then we build out a suite. Now we need a story that explains why if I use product A, there's this organization I trust that has now come up with product B or service B, and I want to try that product. But maybe I'm not going to try that product unless that company has a track record or I know them or understand them. So that's how the stories kind of fit together. Bottom line, I tend to look at this kind of like a book, right? Even if you don't read a lot of books, we understand that books have chapters, right? So a technology company, it evolves. It starts in chapter one as a founder story, maybe with one product or one service. And as time goes on, it progresses. But what you'd really need with that capitalist story is a thread that runs through and connects everything.
Makes sense. And that seems like a good strategy. And I'm sure that's a lot of what you're working with clients on day in and day
out. Absolutely. Especially in technology.
Yes, absolutely. And here we are at the beginning of 2026. So a great time to start to get some of those stories and details correct and on the books and heading in the right direction. So and just for everyone listening, I know we're coming towards the end of this panel and we'll try to get to as many questions as we have. But as you're listening, you hear a lot of the talent and expertise within the community and some good examples of some of the experts in the community on the Q&A today. Anytime as you're working on different projects, if you have questions and things like that, you can always click on that big orange button at the top and get some input. So Phil, the next question that came in is for you, and I am going to try to boil us down to the main point that, okay, so what they're asking is, what are a few root systems, fixes, data, CRM, definitions, that usually deliver quick wins in B2B marketing? And this question is coming to us from, let's see here, it's coming to us from, I'm going to pronounce this the best I can, Maka, who is over in Saudi Arabia.
Okay. So, Mark, one of the key things we found for quick wins is actually looking at data and looking deep within the CRM. We actually did this with a client a little while ago. They had three different CRMs. Within those three CRMs, they had different data sets within each one, making life much more complicated. But they had some serious potential in there. One, they had clients who had bought from them before. And if clients have bought from you before, they're going to be the quickest ones to convert again. If you've got a product that can be sold multiple times or a service that can be sold multiple times, then people that have already been warmed up and they are already interested and have made enough noise for you to say, yes, they're interested. But if you haven't closed them, actually get on and close them, finish the nurture process off and bring them over the line. Now, we did all of that with this client and we actually identified a £4.5 million pipeline from their own data without doing any marketing activities at all. It was sat there ready for the taking. That was hidden in their data. If you've got a decent data repository and you've got your CRM, even if it's a mess, there is something in there that will give you that quick win. So dig into it and just go for it.
I love it. Brian, this next question I think is one that touches a lot of organizations that are advertising via any of the meta properties. So, and this comes from Harry, who's over in Birmingham, England. And what this question is from Harry is, with Meta pushing creative-led campaigns as of late, how should brands think about balancing audience targeting versus broad targeting?
Yeah, it depends on, it's an amazing question. It's a literally a $1 billion question that a lot of people are trying to answer right now. It depends on whether you believe Facebook or not, or believe Meta. What Meta will tell you to do is load all of the creative up, remove all of your audience targeting and just let things fly and trust the algorithm. Okay. Don't think that now when you've got higher investment, what we've seen is clients that are spending, let's say $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 a month. This works a lot better than the clients that are spending $1,000 or $2,000 a month. So, best thing for most businesses is to test it. So try to have a couple campaign line items where you keep those audience parameters in place, and then try a line item or two where you try to just load up the creative. The big thing is trying to get enough creative and the creative velocity that you need in order to test this. So that's kind of the secondary challenge that comes up is most businesses are not adding enough video. They are not updating enough imagery or doing it fast enough for the algorithm to really kick in. So I think we'll probably see in the next, I don't know, probably about 6 months or so, I think some of those audience tools are going to start to go away in the Meta platform, which is very scary. But I do think that things are changing really rapidly in there, and we're going to have, as marketers, less to work with. So better to start testing now than later.
I think not just Meta, I think any of the ad platforms would love to say, just put it on automatic and let us handle everything.
So, yeah. And it's a little bit of the fox in the hen house, right? Because their algorithm is built to hopefully work for you, but it's also built to help them make money. They have shareholders. And that's why I say it's just a matter of how much you trust those platforms. So
the next question comes to us from, and it comes to us from Ashley over in Seattle, Washington, here in the U.S. And oh, I love this question. How can brands differentiate between junk traffic and high intent visitors when platforms report both as paid clicks?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think what we talked about earlier, as far as once they click on a consent banner and we resolve that contact, we know that that's a good person, where a lot of the traffic that comes to your site could be bots and the rest, and it all skews your metrics. So we look for the ones that actually take an action that resolves them. And then that way, those are the ones we focus on.
That makes a ton of sense. And one other question while we're speaking that came in for you as well. What are a few examples of behavioral segments inside a single channel like Facebook that usually perform very differently across the segments? And this came to us from Amelia over in Manchester, again, over in the UK.
Yeah, I would say time on site. Also, how many times they come back. If they're there once and they bounce, or they're there for 10 seconds and they leave, or they don't take any actions, that tends to be not as valuable. It might be there earlier on in the buying phase and it just takes a little longer for them to be educated or be in the, problem solution aware at that point.
Fantastic. And the next question that I want to try to get to came in for Paul. And the question is, where on a website do you recommend weaving in the capital S story so it actually influences buying behavior, which I think is what everyone on the event today is looking to do, is to influence that buying behavior. And this comes to us from Isla over in Edinburgh, Scotland.
Great. Well, Isla, the answer is two places immediately. Number one is the homepage, as we all know. That still is, despite many of us attempting to get people to come into websites from different pages, that's still the most probably heavily visited page on any business's website. Now, the mistake a lot of people make is they think the story on the homepage, if there's going to be a story, has to be very lengthy. And that's not accurate. A sentence, a few words that distill your story on your homepage are absolutely necessary. Now, what we find then beyond the homepage, especially in the technology world, is your about page is extremely important. If a visitor to your site sees the homepage and is intrigued by the shorter version of your story, and they're considering what it is you do, product or service, they're going to ask themselves, who are these people? And then they're going to go to your about page. And that's where you can have a longer iteration of your story. And there are many ways to do that. By longer, I don't necessarily mean Tolstoy and War and Peace. I mean enough for your specific audience that they're going to have a clear understanding of whether they want to engage with you more deeply. I mean, I think for all of us, those of us on the panel and those of us attending today, you got to look at your website as your digital storefront. That is where people are going to engage with you first. And your story needs to be in those two places, especially, as well as elsewhere.
Okay. Well, I know we're right at time for this session. Coming up next, we have Larissa Schneider over at Unframed. So she has a great presentation for everyone. And if you'd like to reach out to any of the experts on the panel today or from anywhere else on the event, just hit that big orange button and we'll get you connected.
Matthew Stafford just showed that the biggest growth lever for most online stores isn't another ad campaign. It's finally treating data as a way to understand humans on the other side of the screen, clean up junk traffic, and convert more of the clicks you're already paying for. For e-commerce leaders, that means investing in identification, segmentation, and AI-assisted analysis so every visitor, email, and ad dollar works harder. If this episode made you rethink where your real profit center is, subscribe to B2B Automation Spotlight.
Thanks for tuning in to the Software Oasis Podcast Network with more than 200,000 listeners each month. You're invited to join our engaged community of B2B founders and executives at our next live full-day Software Oasis virtual AI event with the world's top B2B AI experts. Reserve your comp pass today, get ahead with real AI strategies, join the first Thursday of every month. Tap green button at softwareoasis.com or use show notes link to claim your spot today.